supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we got another one of them jam-packed shows for you today, cats and kittens. In the question of the week, we'll talk about something that happens to almost everybody, especially people with children. You get these tiny little seedlings come home on Earth Day or Arbor Day, and how are you supposed to take these things that are smaller than a pencil and turn them into the mighty trees or shrubs they eventually can be? We'll walk you all through that. We'll also have a fascinating interview about how a segment of the Philadelphia prison system is actually composting food waste into garden gold, which is a lot trickier than you may think. That's a lot to get done, so we better hop right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Darlene, welcome to You Bet Your Garden. Hello, Darlene.
How are you?
I am just fine today, Darlene. How are you doing?
I'm fine, and I'll be better when you give me some of your wonderful advice.
All right. Well, where is Darlene, first of all?
Darlene is in what they call now Southwest Center City Graduate Hospital area.
Oh, of Philadelphia,
Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Darlene?
About 10 or 11 years ago, I got a rose bush, a Dolly Parton rose bush. And she puts out these beautiful scarlet red roses. And then about 4 years ago, Mike, these little caterpillar-looking bugs started getting on it. They're only about a half an inch in length, and they curl up in a ring, and they just suck all the life out of the leaves. They either devour the leaf or they just suck the life out of the leaf, and the leaf just droops. And the roses now produce buds, but they don't have enough energy to open. And if they do open, it's a very small, lifeless-looking bloom.
Okay. Now, it's hard to tell whether your little caterpillars are little caterpillars or if they're a bizarre insect pest called the rose sawfly. S-A-W-F-L-Y. It's a very unusual pest, but the larval stage looks identical to a little caterpillar.
Okay.
So, let's back up a little bit. Do you prune your rose?
Yes, I do.
When?
In the spring.
Okay, good, good. Is there any mulch under your roses?
No, not really.
Okay. Do you feed your roses?
Well, I have a little compost stand in the backyard. For the past 3 years, I've been developing that. And I put that down. And that's about it, because it seems as though everything I tried didn't work. So I started with this compost, and my compost is principally vegetables.
Oh, that's not compost. That's a garbage pile, unfortunately. If you want to compost outdoors, you shred up lots of fall leaves. If you want to reuse your kitchen waste, you get a worm bin that you would keep inside. Now, if what you have out there, some of it is like nice black soil that smells good and looks good, you can use it.
It is. And it has red wigglers in it.
Oh, okay. So you have kind of an outdoor worm bin.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, that's very weird, but as long as the compost looks good and smells good, it's going to be fine. Use that as a mulch underneath the rose. Have you pruned your rose yet for this season?
No, I was waiting for you.
Okay, good. I want you to do that. I want you to prune your rose back, and then I want you to go to like a local hardware store, a birding store, or look online, go to a garden center, and get a couple of suet feeders. Yes, these will be little metal cages you'll hang nearby, and you'll put suet cakes in them. And this will attract meat-eating birds. And I want you to hang these near your rose bush so that when these caterpillars or sawflies do show up, if you've used suet feeders around there for the month previous to that, you'll have all these meat-eating birds around. And I only want you to fill the suet feeders the first time. When they empty out, don't refill them. You want to get the birds in your area and then have them waiting around for these pests.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to check your rose every day. Mm-hmm. When you see the first sign of these pests, the first thing I want you to do is get a garden hose and an adjustable nozzle and go up to it early in the morning and shoot them off of the leaves with the water. And do that every morning.
Okay.
That should be enough. If it's not enough, what you want to do is go to a garden center and get a horticultural oil that's labeled for use in the summertime. What you would do is you would go out again in the morning and you would spray this oil directly on the pests.
Mm-hmm.
It'll smother them, but it won't harm you.
Okay.
Although I think attracting the birds there and shooting that first generation off, really catching that first generation of the pests and shooting them off, I don't think you're going to have to move up to the oil.
All right. Oh, thank you so much.
You give us a call back if they come back and you can't control them.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Darlene.
All right. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Dave, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm okay, Dave. How are you?
I'm fine. Nice day.
All right. Where is it a nice day?
It's a nice day in Bala Cynwyd.
What can we do for you, sir?
We have a situation with, I believe it's black bamboo. My neighbor has planted some, and it seems to have made it into our yard. He was told it was least invasive. I guess that's on a scale. and in another couple of weeks or thereabouts, it's going to start coming up, and we have it all over our backyard now. You know, it's getting to my driveway, my garage, and I'm trying to figure out a way to get rid of it. I don't know if it's his responsibility or what.
Right.
What do you suggest?
Well, I suggest you get in the Wayback Machine and go back 5 or 10 years and stop Godzilla before he gets out of Tokyo Harbor. How long has this invasion been creeping towards you?
It's probably been 6 or 7 years. They grow like 2 feet in a day.
Oh, yeah.
Or more.
Mm-hmm. There are basically two types of bamboos. There are what are known as running bamboos, the most famous of which is also known as arrow bamboo. That is your basic bamboo.
Right.
A friend of mine told me it was nicknamed arrow bamboo because at the height of the summer, when it's growing fiercely, it can travel underground as far as you can shoot an arrow.
Pretty much.
The other types of bamboos, which I presume he thought he was getting, are called clumping bamboos. And these are like ornamental grasses. These are generally much more attractive bamboos, sometimes not hardy in our climate, and you need to be further down south or in a different area to grow them. But you have a form of running bamboo, and you really should have jumped on this the first year. It will advance underground 10 or 12 feet in a bad year when it was planted. If he had known what he had had, landscapers have a special fabric, a special material called rhizome barrier, because the underground parts of the plant that are the most invasive, they're called rhizomes.
Right.
So if you plant running bamboo, you must install rhizome barrier.
He said they dug down a couple of feet, but evidently not deep enough.
But he did it, not a professional.
Well, no, I believe he had it done.
Okay. Well, then you guys have to have a war room map. You have to go to a kitchen table and figure out what you're going to do. There's two ways to take care of this, one of which is to have a backhoe come in this summer and literally excavate all the rhizomes out that you can and then reseed the lawns mid-August. The other tactic is the rope-a-dope method, where you cut every culm back to about 6 inches off the ground, let it regrow until it forms true leaves, and then cut it again. Over a course of 3 years, that typically will exhaust the root system. But if he planted it on his property, he is legally responsible.
That was my question.
Yes, at least the precedent right now from the Virginia Supreme Court is a property owner who plants an invasive plant and it strays to another property and causes damage, he must remediate the damage and stop the plant from moving over. Now, that's the Virginia Supreme Court, but that's the highest ruling that exists in the world right now. And if you wanted to pursue that, you would get a real estate lawyer.
Okay.
So certainly the smartest thing to do is sit down and talk about this. You should have done this 5 years ago. Go to the website AmericanBamboo.org. They have many articles. We have a couple articles about running bamboo up at our website, but we mostly refer people to American Bamboo. They can also put you in touch with contractors and landscapers who know how to manage this beast.
Oh, boy. I guess I have to talk to them.
Yeah, sooner than later.
Sooner than later.
Good luck, dude.
Thank you much, Mike.
Okay.
Righto.
Take care. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll be doing a very special talk on the best ways to turn your yard and garden waste and all those stinky scraps from your kitchen into real garden gold at the Burlington County Earth Fair in historic Smithville Park on Sunday, June 22nd. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with turning food into great compost and saving tiny little trees so that they can become great big trees, and, of course, lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for WHYY's You Bet Your Garden is made possible by Burpee. Burpee can help do the gardening for you with garden-ready plants, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, herbs, and more, delivered at planting time in your region. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com. And Star Roses and Plants, the company that introduced the knockout family of roses. Drift roses are low-maintenance, disease-resistant, and hardy to zone 4, a cross between full-size ground cover roses and miniature roses that bloom all season. More at starrosesandplants.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it has happened to everyone, especially people with children. They come home with these tiny little sprouts that are tinier than a pencil, but they're supposed to live for many, many years and turn into giant trees. How are we going to keep them alive to be able to do that? We'll tell you how when we get to the question of the week. We'll also take lots more of your fascinating phone calls. But now, a very special interview about a topic that many people misunderstand: turning food waste into garden gold. It's a very tricky proposition, but a segment of the Philadelphia prison system is pioneering a great way to do it. Laura Cassidy is executive assistant to the Commissioner of Prisons for the City of Philadelphia and is running composting programs in those prisons that I find very exciting, and we want to hear some more about it. Laura, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
So, how did composting come about? Are you a longtime home composter who wanted to bring it to your job, or was this you realized you had to do something with all this food waste coming out of this vast enterprise?
Well, I will give the credit to my husband as far as being the longtime composter. He's been doing it for about 25 years at home. Basically, I am in charge of recycling at the prison system. So I was looking at the recycling, and if you do recycling correctly, usually what's left is food waste.
Yeah.
So I was trying to really reduce our bottom line as how much we're spending on solid waste disposal costs. That's how it initially started. The prisons, I've calculated, spends roughly about $250,000 on solid waste disposal costs. And if we take the food out of that process, we can reduce that as much as 70%, or anywhere from 30 to 70%.
And you're a microcosm of every home and industry. There's nothing different about it, except maybe there's a better level of control from the top.
There is a better level of control. You know, I was walking around with my pie charts and graphs, how much money we could save. And I finally convinced the EPA, let me give them a plug because they gave me a grant to start this composting. We moved forward and I reached out to consultants because really I knew very little about composting at the time. And trust me, I'm the compost queen now. So I reached out nationally and I found a consultant and he designed our system for us, an aerated static pile system.
Okay, good. Because the type of composting your husband is doing in your backyard is going to be largely or entirely yard waste, things like his fall leaves and prunings and maybe little bits of your kitchen waste, right?
Correct. Well, it's all of our kitchen waste, but you know, it's the majority is lawn waste.
And in a prison, you don't got those leaves.
No, we do not. It's pretty much processed foods. We do have fruits and vegetables. Unfortunately, we have more fruits and vegetables than I'd like to see in there.
Obviously, we as people want the people in prison to be eating lots of fruits and vegetables to help their health problems, but it's unbalancing your load. What would you like to see more of them eating corn, chewing on corn stalks?
Well, that, and we get crates and crates of oranges, which make it harder for the compost.
Oh, they're impossible,
yeah. So we decided to compost them separately, and they're not in our aerated system. So they're basically in a separate bin because, as you know, they take longer to decompose. So
yeah, they're really tricky, orange rinds.
But I heard that they're very good for azaleas and rose bushes once they're done.
You'll tell us.
I will. Sir.
Now, this is all food waste.
Correct.
You know, in a home situation, you can add a limited amount of food waste to a pile that has a lot of dry carbon in it, mostly shredded leaves.
Correct.
And that'll kind of evaporate into the mix. People who only want to compost their food waste, who like live in an apartment or claim they don't have trees or things like that, their best bet is a worm bin indoors, you know, because
right.
specialized red worms and bedding from shredded newspaper can take, because as you know, there's not a lot of nutrition in a lot of this kitchen waste compared to leaves or coffee grounds or some of the high
Correct,
nutrition
yes.
stuff. But those worms can really do a job at concentrating the nutrients. I know when it comes to composting food waste on a vast scale, there's a lot of different systems out there. And now describe the system that you chose and you're using.
We have an aerated static pile system. So right now, currently, we have...
Okay, so static means the pile isn't being turned?
It's not being turned.
Okay, but aerated means you're...
pumping air into it.
Okay.
We have PVC piping embedded underneath the bays. We're forcing air. We have a blower attached to it set on a timer. One of our officers, he's there every day. I call him my cook now.
The compost cook, yeah.
Right. I mean, he's out there taking
temperatures. Get him an apron.
I did, actually, the other day. I got them all aprons. And he has a crew of inmates that work with him. They take the temperatures. They, you know, empty the bays. They screen it. I mean, they work with it every day and getting the feel for it.
And you know how important that is. Just to even look at it every day and be looking for trouble gives you such an advantage.
Well, you know, at first I was concerned when we first started up, we weren't getting the temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, you need at least, I think, 3 days of 132 degrees to kill any pathogens. So we weren't getting that. And I'm constantly calling our consultant, what are we doing? You know, and it was just a matter of playing with the timer, the blower, getting the right mix. And we're also mixing in there wood chips. That's what we're using.
You need some brown material.
Correct. So Fairmont Park, the recycling center, they were donating wood chips. Because
right, which would not work in a home pile.
Correct.
Because they're too dense, but in a system like yours, you can use those for the carbon base.
Right. So, you know, that's our mainly our carbon base. So
now, have you finished? Have you had finished product?
Yes, we have.
Was and that exciting?
It was wonderful. I mean, as they call it, black gold, as
yeah.
you know. I mean, just seeing the finished product was amazing.
And how long have you been doing this, and when was the first batch made?
The first batch, I think it was like last spring we started seeing our first batches. This would be our second year. I guess it's 30 days in the bay, and then we take it out of the bay and leave it 60 days in an adjacent field
mm-hmm.
to sit. So,
and what does it look like after 30 days of this intense process of aeration?
It doesn't look like food anymore. It looks almost, I mean, for someone that doesn't know any better, it looks like brown dirt.
Right, okay. And you're not, and there's no worms or anything.
No worms.
And you're not introducing microbes or anything like that. Just air and food.
Correct.
Obviously, an intelligent mix of food and a very intelligent use of forced air.
Yes. And also the wood chips are key as well. At first, you know, we thought maybe we were using too much and too little. And it's just playing with that mix to get it right.
And that's the only way anyone ever figured out composting. Now, are we talking about one building, one, quote, prison? Are we talking about all of the prison facilities in the city? I haven't been incarcerated in 30 years, so I kind of forget where everything is.
Well, our facilities are located in the northeast section of the city. We have six facilities. The facility that we're currently taking the food waste, or should I say source separated organics,
right.
They house on average about 800 inmates. Roughly about 700 pounds a day come out of the facility. We did get a grant from the Mayor's Office of Sustainability to expand our operations. So we are going to all of our facilities. So we're building additional bays. Currently, we have three bays that accommodate 800 people. You know, we worked with the consultant, figured out the dimensions of the bays to accommodate their food waste. So now the next two facilities that we're going to move to house about 1,500 inmates. I'm hoping once we expand, I mean, I do see when, you know, I've prepared the initial estimates, I do see a decrease in what's going to a landfill. While it's a small amount, but when we go system-wide, we should see a significant savings.
But you're a living example that if you take the time to research it and you don't just choose how you're going to do it in some crazy way, if you follow the science, that this essentially worthless food waste can be turned into incredibly valuable fertilizer.
Correct. So, yeah, I mean, it is very gratifying, and it took a lot of time to research and get it right.
Well, no, stop right there. That's why it's working. That's why it's working, because you didn't just throw stuff at a wall and see what stuck, so to speak. You researched it. You got the right unit. You're paying attention. You're closing your own circle, and you're keeping your footprint small.
And I was very surprised. The community was very supportive when I went out to the meetings. At first, I envisioned a lynch mob.
Uh-huh.
Because they were concerned, any mm-hmm. kind of traffic and smells.
Are you giving them any of the compost?
That is the plan. We're going to be working with a local landscaper, and he's going to deliver it to community gardens that call and won it. So
can you imagine 5 years from now when you're talking to out-of-town relatives and or they come visit and they love your garden and the compost mulch? It's not that crappy wood chip mulch. And you go, yeah, we're so lucky to live near the prison.
Yeah, I hope so.
You're off to a great start. Laura Cassidy is the executive assistant to the Commissioner of Prisons for the City of Philadelphia. She is also the reigning compost queen of those prisons turning food waste into garden gold. Laura, it's been a real pleasure to have you on You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much.
And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Kathy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing good. Kath, how are you doing?
I'm great. I just heard your show for the very first time a couple days ago, and I really, really enjoy it. You're so knowledgeable, and it's helped me out a lot.
Oh, good. Thank you.
My question is, what do you think would be a good ground cover for property that is right on the beach?
What beach?
Longport, New Jersey.
You're down by Wildwood almost.
Yes, almost, yeah.
Okay, so you're southern New Jersey. And is this replacing sandy damage, or what's going on?
Well, yes, and we've already done all that. But what's happening is the strip between the street and the sidewalk, which usually people just put grass
right
down. I have a small, low, spreading junipers.
Right.
And I'm hoping that they're going to cover the area in lieu of grass, but they're not taking off that quickly, and I hesitate to put more money in them to add some more. So I thought, well, maybe there's some other type of a ground cover.
Well, actually, what's interesting is my experience in New Jersey is always going there as a child and even as an adult and vacationing there, but not so much in homes, whereby down in the Virginia Beach area, and especially some of the areas near Virginia Beach that are not the resort area per se, but where people rent out their homes for a week, I've seen a lot of these kind of plantings. I see a lot of beach grasses and dune grasses, and more, I'm also seeing people go back to grasses that were native in this area and, of course, are adapted to the blindingly hot sun in the summertime, the reflected heat from the sand, and the occasional immersion with salt water, but always getting sprayed with it during storms and stuff. And I'm not sure that the low-growing junipers are such a bad idea. Now, when you planted them in this little strip of land, did you find that the soil was mostly or all sand?
A lot, yeah. Not all, but mostly.
And did you do anything to improve that?
Yes, I had some good soil brought in. I'm not sure what kind it was. I had a landscaper come and put totally new soil in, mixed in with everything that I have.
Okay. And then you planted the low-growing junipers?
Yes.
What time of year did they go in?
He put them in, I'm going to say, early spring.
And that was last year?
Yes.
And so they have not died?
No.
Okay. But they're not growing as fast as you would like them to.
Exactly. So I'm thinking, oh, you know, can I throw in some pachysandra in with it or some other ground cover? But
I would not, because of your unique ecological situation there, I would not bring in anything that wasn't native or anything that could possibly be invasive. I would urge you to contact your local county extension agent and ask what are the recommended plantings. If you had a blank slate, I would definitely suggest beachfront grasses, dune grasses. And one thing that I've noticed from seeing these in like Ocean City, Maryland and Bethany Beach is the plants are very slow growing. You would think that they would grow fast because of the summertime heat and everything. But what it is a lot of this organic matter, anything that you added to help give the plants some foundation, that gets eaten up by the sun, that gets washed away. What I'm going to suggest is you find a good source of compost, yard waste compost, not composted manure, not composted human waste or anything like that, but just good compost, rich, black soil that was made from people's fall leaves and stuff.
Okay.
And that you shovel that all around the junipers. You use that, and you don't have wood mulch or anything out there, do you?
Yeah, actually, there is mulch there.
Okay, that's going to slow down the growth of the junipers and and maybe even harm them. Get rid of that wood mulch. Get rid of it completely and replace it with an equal amount of compost. And I think you'll see the plants begin to grow at a better rate. And I think you should do that every spring. Apply at least 2 inches of compost to the surface of the soil. Don't dig it in. Don't disturb the root system if the plants look good. Just put it on the surface of the soil. And if you see a good response and at the end of this season you really don't see much of the compost left anymore, put it down in the fall again as well. And the compost will also provide protection, will prevent the sun from hitting that sandy soil directly and heating it up so much.
Okay, great. So then you would advise me I should just be patient. I was going to maybe add more in between. Should I just leave them alone, do the compost, and let them take off on their own?
If you wanted to add a few grasses in there, that mm-hmm. could look spectacular.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all your help.
All right. Good luck, Kathy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind tomato growers to be sure and provide sturdy support for heirlooms, beefsteaks, and other indeterminate varieties whose vines typically exceed 10 feet in length by the end of the season, and to never wet the leaves of your tomatoes or roses or just about any other plant when watering, and to never, ever wet the leaves of your plants, including lawns, in the evening. But don't go looking for all the details under Wise Watering in the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to turn tiny twigs into great big trees. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for WHYY's You Bet Your Garden is made possible by Burpee. Burpee can help do the gardening for you with garden-ready plants, tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, herbs, and more, delivered at planting time in your region. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com. And Star Roses and Plants, the company that introduced the Knockout family of roses. Drift roses are low-maintenance, disease-resistant, and hardy to zone 4, a cross between full-size ground cover roses and miniature roses that bloom all season. More at starrosesandplants.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. How to save those tiny little seedlings you got for Arbor Day and Earth Day. How to nurture them and nursemaid them along until they can become titanic trees or stately shrubs in your landscape. You will not want to miss this vital, vital bit of information, and you won't. It's coming right up after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. And 1-888-346-9499. Rich, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. How are you?
I am doing well today. Rich, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
And where is Rich doing well?
Washington Crossing, PA.
Very good. Where Washington crossed to Delaware.
Exactly.
All right. What can we do for Rich in a historic corner of Pennsylvania?
I purchased a house a little while back, and the house had been vacant for about 2 years.
Whoa.
I'm in the process of renovating it. And I understand from my neighbors that the previous owner was an avid gardener. In fact, he has a number of raised beds in the backyard, and my girlfriend has it in her heart to become a vegetable gardener.
What are the raised beds framed with? Can you tell?
They're framed with, it looks like, 2x6s.
And how old does the wood look?
The wood looks, I'd say, less than 10 years.
That all sounds good. How tall are the beds?
The beds are about 6 inches up, 8 inches up.
Okay. And the area is plantable? Everything's not overgrown with terrible weeds and everything?
There's some grass that's growing out of them, but with a shovel, the top layer scrapes right off.
Okay.
And my question is, you know, having been lying fallow for a number of years, is there anything that we need to treat that soil, or is it in better shape than if it were just planted last year?
Well, it's certainly in better shape than if it were a flat earth soil, so to speak. If they went to the trouble of building raised beds, they probably filled them with good loose soil. You know, in Pennsylvania, it's real cheap to get a soil test, although this is a busy time of year. And you might have to wait a while, but it might be fun to get in touch with your county extension agent and send a sample off and see what they say about the soil out there. But what I would suggest you do is you remove, obviously, all the grass and weeds. And then I would top the beds off with some nice new yard waste compost. In your area, there's great nurseries, independent nurseries and garden centers, and they sell compost in bags and bulk compost. Local municipalities may provide compost. Just make sure you don't get any old sewage sludge.
Okay.
You want yard waste compost. And 2 inches on top of the beds should be all you need to do. And then there's really no difference other than the improvement when you're planting in raised beds compared to flat earth. But you guys don't have any experience, right?
Right.
So what are you planning on growing?
She's gotten her hands on onions, broccoli, peas, tomatoes, rhubarb, cantaloupe.
Crazy woman.
Is a crazy woman, yeah.
Is this mostly seeds or plants?
She's ordered a bunch of plants and has gotten some seeds, which she's started and have begun to grow nicely already.
Okay,
indoors.
Oh, okay, but not under lights or anything.
No,
that's going to work out. That's going to work out very poorly.
Yeah, no, it's all natural light.
That's not going to work.
Okay,
seed starting is a very difficult thing to achieve. First year gardeners should always buy their plants.
Okay. It's
too late for peas because they're a cool season crop. They need like 60 days to mature, and the vines will burn up in July. So, you know, typically peas are planted, maybe they're sprouted inside, but they're put outside in like March. You know,
okay.
Those are a cool season crop. You're going to have to learn. There's cool season crops like lettuce, spinach, peas, broccoli. And then there's your main season crops like cantaloupes or tomatoes and stuff. Is she trying to grow the cantaloupe from seed?
Yes, and actually they're budding very nicely.
Yeah, ixnay that though.
Okay.
Until you learn how to grow from seed, it's much better to go out and buy plants that have been professionally grown so far and install them in the garden. So go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org. And go to Garden Answers A to Z and read the raised beds articles. and then read the succession planting articles. So you'll know at the end of the summer, for instance, then you can do, she can do lettuce and spinach and pansies and broccoli and all the cool season crops. And research the other plants you want to grow. Tomatoes are finicky. You really have to know what you're doing and what kind of tomato you have, but the articles will hold your hands. The bottom line is the raised beds will make weed control easy. Having 2 inches of compost on the surface of the soil will feed your plants. And if you have success with purchased plants outside this summer, then over the winter, read the seed starting articles at our website. And then after you're done reading them, see if you have the courage to actually. It's much harder to start seeds than it is to grow plants outside in the summer.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, Rich?
I appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
Good luck, sir.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate your call, Bob. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Richboro, Pennsylvania, which is in Bucks County.
Okay, just outside of Philadelphia, not far. What can we do for Bob in Richboro?
Well, I've got a garden, it's about 10 by 20 feet, 200 square feet. And every fall, what I do is I pack it up with all the leaves that come down, maples, oaks, whatever, mix it in with grass clippings that my neighbors give me. And all winter long, I add coffee grounds, eggshells, and kitchen waste.
Okay.
And it breaks down. You know, over the winter, it packs down. Early in the spring, I've already done it once. I take my rototiller out, and I rototill it and get some dirt mixed in with whatever's still there, and it breaks down. And by June, it's beautiful black soil. However, I plant tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, and a couple of potato plants. And potatoes have done okay, but my tomatoes and peppers and eggplants the last couple of years have been a little bit on the sparse side.
But the plants look okay.
The leaf part of it is really wonderful.
You're doing what we used to call sheet composting. You're piling all this material on top of the garden and then turning it in the spring.
Yes.
Okay. The grass clippings that you're including, are you certain these are from lawns that have not been treated with herbicides?
Yes.
And you have a flat ground garden?
Yes.
You don't have raised beds?
No.
Well, I think you've dodged a bullet, first of all. You're putting a lot of half-finished material into the soil when you till it in. I think one of the things you're doing is, even as you think you are enriching your soil, I think you're depleting the nutrients from your soil. I'm glad to hear that the plants looked good. If they didn't, then it would be herbicide damage from the lawn. Your weed problems must be immense.
There is a lot of weeds.
Yeah. See, when you till, two bad things happen. You are releasing all the nitrogen in your soil. Some of the other elements in your soil are stable, but nitrogen is very ephemeral. So every time you work up the soil, you release the nitrogen that wishes to combine with its nitrogen cousins in the air we breathe. So every time you break up that soil, you release nutrients rather than create new ones. Plus, you're exposing millions of old weed seeds to the sunlight, which is the trigger for germination, and then you're covering those weed seeds over with soil and watering them. So you are creating 95% of your weed problems. So what I would suggest you do, split your garden in half or just take one quarter of it. No matter what, I think you need to rake all that material off of the garden temporarily, because that heavy layer of material is preventing the sun from getting through now that the sun is finally out and drying your ground and warming up your soil. So it is good to have shredded leaf cover over gardens in the winter time, but as soon as the spring arrives, you should pull that off so the soil can warm up and dry out. And then I wish to suggest that you build one or two raised beds, distinct 4x8 areas that'll be raised up from the surrounding area, and fill those with the best material from the bottom of this piled up material. I guarantee that the raised beds are going to be as productive as the best gardening year you ever had. And they're going to be virtually weed free because you didn't expose all those weed seeds by tilling, and there shouldn't be any weed seeds in your composted material. Raised bed gardeners normally get a couple of weeks head start. This year, they're getting like 4 to 6 weeks of a head start because our beds drain much faster than flat ground.
Okay, beautiful.
So pile up the clean grass clippings, well-shredded with well-shredded leaves, mix in coffee grounds as you got them, cover your beds with shredded leaves over the winter, start building raised beds. When you see the production in one 4x8 raised bed compared to twice as big in your flat ground garden, you're going to start building more raised beds this fall.
Oh, beautiful. I appreciate it. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Bob. Good luck, sir.
Thank you, sir. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. How to help teeny tiny seedlings grow up big and strong. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, read us this week's intriguing question.
Sure, Mike. Anya in Julian, PA, 20 minutes north of State College, writes, I enjoy listening to your show and have learned a lot, but I have a question I haven't heard you address. We are getting seedlings from the Game Commission this spring to plant on our property for wildlife. We'll be getting Norway spruce, silky dogwood, mixed fruiting shrubs, and some flowering crab apples. They will be very small seedlings when they come, and I'd like to maximize their chances of survival. Can we plant them in large pots or a temporary garden area to grow for a year or two? Or would it be better to just plant them in their permanent home? Mike, this is a great question. I have friends who received, quote, trees as part of an Arbor Day celebration, and the poor things are barely the size of a pencil. Can regular people keep such fragile things alive?
I think so. My wife came home last spring with a face that said, I'm sorry, and an arm full of tiny little trees and little plastic bags, orphans left unclaimed after an Earth Day event.
And she couldn't just let them die.
Oh, no, of course not. So I become an unprepared nursemaid for a dozen tiny trees that had set out on a lunchroom table for a week.
And are they still alive?
All but one of them made it through our savage winter. And that one went completely missing, so it was taken by some animal as a result of my poor caging.
Okay, so walk us through what people should do when they get tiny seedlings like this.
Well, the first thing you do with any bare root plant, that's a plant that's not in any kind of soil, is let those roots sit in water for an hour or two. Not the entire plant, just the exposed roots. This will help rehydrate them and perhaps send a message to the plant that it's not quite dead yet. Then fill some medium-sized plastic pots that have good drainage holes in the bottom, about halfway up with a light, loose, bagged, soil-free mix, like a seed-starting mix or potting soil. Not terracotta pots or old yogurt cups and no garden soil.
I know you should never use garden soil in a container because it's heavy and full of weed seeds, but why not terracotta or homemade?
Well, terracotta is pretty, but it doesn't hold moisture well, and it wouldn't survive winter uncracked outdoors, which these sprouts are going to have to do. And I just prefer professionally made containers for really tricky jobs like this. There's so much less to go wrong. Now, moisten the mix in those pots, and in a separate container, mix up a batch of half compost, half soil-free mix. Place the moistened roots of one tree or shrub on top of the mix in one of the prepared pots and fill in around it with this new mix. Only one plant per pot. Pull the plant up gently as you work so that when you're done, only the roots are below the soil line. Then sit all the pots in a couple inches of water till they're saturated. Take them outdoors to a spot where they'll get about a half day of sun and place chicken wire around the whole setup. These tiny plants are prime food for deer, rabbits, mice, and such. Make sure the covering can exclude all those creatures, but make sure it's also easy to remove because you're going to have to rock the pots every day to see how they feel. When they feel light, slowly add water. But don't water them if the pots still feel heavy.
Should we feed them?
No, that's what the compost is for. If they start to grow rapidly, you can water them with some compost tea or spread some worm castings on top of their soil. But that's it. Nothing stronger.
Then should they come inside for the winter?
Absolutely not. No. These kinds of plants have to be exposed to a certain number of hours of cold temperatures over the winter. And they also need to go through the normal progression of all the seasons.
But they can't be left outside in pots or the roots will freeze.
That's absolutely right. So when summer turns to fall, dig holes and bury the pots in an area where the soil in your landscape drains exceptionally well. And then rig up a super sturdy protection of wire mesh. Winter is when herbivores really chow down on small plants like this. Then in the spring, lift the pots out of the ground and decide what you're going to do. If the plants have achieved a decent size, consider planting them where they're going to go permanently. If you're unsure and you're going to be around to take care of them all summer, take them through another season in the pots and plant them in the ground the following spring.
Now, how long do you need to protect them from rabbits and deer?
Quite a while. Most bare root trees and shrubs are several years older and much larger when you get them, and they're still prime targets for deer and rabbit attack. You can move up to just wrapping the trunks when they get to be teenagers, but the longer you protect them from the teeth of animals outdoors, the better chance your grandchildren will get to see them. Well, that sure was a complete guide to growing seedlings into strong plants, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to put me out unprotected if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org.
Oh, please, please tell us where you live when you email us. Oh, please give us your location. Oh, please, please, please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Quitter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Al Banks. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar are You Bet Your Garden's internet illuminators. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor is Al Banks. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our production assistant is Marissa Nicosia. I'm Mike McGrath, and I'm all grown up and tall and sturdy. And hey, what's that nibbling around my feet? Oh, man, I took the chicken wire off too soon. Well, I'll put it right back on and see you again next week. Get away from there. Hey, get away. Go. Are you imperiled by poison ivy, sucked dry by mosquitoes? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll help negate those nasty nuisances and reveal the best small fruits to grow, build a rain garden, and more.